Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha and welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. Thank you for joining us as always. Tonight we're here to talk about the Netflix series, well, now available on Netflix, The Confession Tapes. The creator, director, I guess executive producer, there's different names for those of you out there that are listening to the show for the educational side, television, documentary, network series have different, there's showrunner, there's the main executive producer, director is more so the film medium. And we're going to discuss this series that we got. Thank you again from Falco and April. Titled The Confession Tapes, which is now available on Netflix. I watched these the other night, and it's a 6-episode series, and it's really, really interesting. They go fast. They're, let's see. I'm just kind of opening some of the information for you to get it right. There's 7 episodes. For some reason, the press release says 6, but that's okay. Sometimes things just go the way they go. We're waiting on Kelly, the director, to call in, and she's going to talk to us about, well, multiple different things. We'd like to just jump into anything here at Talking Pictures. And so, yeah, this is a lot of fun for us because this was a really great show and it was really intriguing. It was very, I have the guest, but I'll hold off one moment with her. It was very intriguing and it was, it was very well edited. It was very well kept you, some of these series, you know, they have a tendency to lose you around part 4 or part 5, or you kind of stick with it because you've already invested 4 hours, so you kind of gut yourself through the next hours. This one is one of the few series that I've just, before I knew it, I was to the last part, and that's always a special thing about a series. If it can take you for 6-7 hours, that puts you up there in the Ken Burns status. Although this isn't a specific documentary about baseball or jazz or the war, when you can be kept one moment, when you can be kept for that long, then it's a real sign of a great filmmaker. And obviously, sorry, just one second. We're having a brief, just technical difficulty. It happens, as all filmmakers know. And you just roll with it. It's the famous one is that when you're rolling sound, a plane takes off, or one of the actors about to say it's their line, they need to clear their throat. So The Confession Tapes, I'll read the synopsis here before I bring on, and then I'll also have the director kind of tell us about it. It's a true crime conceptual documentary series created and directed by Kelly Loudenberg, exploring criminal cases in which people have confessed to crimes they claim they did not commit. Each episode is structured around the taped interrogation. The interrogator's voice is the narrative foil that springboards into present-day interviews, archival media coverage, and court proceedings. The interrogation video acts as a structural spine and is threaded throughout, showing how different narratives emerge over time. This was definitely an interesting technique, and we'll bring Welcome. Are you with us?
Hi, yeah, this is Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Congratulations on this wonderful series. I was just telling the audience how sometimes some of these series that have six or seven parts, that around part four, you kind of feel obligated as a viewer to finish it, but that this one just went, you know, before I knew it, I was on the last one. So kudos to you on that.
Oh, that's great. How did you feel afterwards?
Oh, you know, it was very, it was creepy. It made me, I mean, I know we could spend hours talking about the justice system and politics and this opinion and that opinion on law and lawyers and cops but yeah, I felt really, I don't want to spoil anything, but all I'll say is the Canada episode was the one that got me the most. I went to film school there and having friends up there and hearing their opinions of what they think about America and our system, that was a really interesting thing. My first question is always the most generic, but why this idea, and is there a way you can tie it into something that specifically like went on, not just, oh, this felt like something to do, like this felt like, do you have a law background, or was there a case you saw, or was there, you know, something where you're like, okay, I gotta expose this?
Yeah, well, that's kind of what happened. It made me want to have a law background. It made me want to go to law school. But the first case I found was the Lawrence Delisle and wife into the Detroit River because of a sticking accelerator. That was the first one that I really investigated, and I was a little shocked that no one, not even like the news magazine shows, had done any journalism on it. And I knew it just seemed like a show where it just depends how you look at the evidence, how you sort of interpret the crime. You know, it's highly subjective is what I want to say. And I think certain how someone might look at a story from, you know, completely different angles. Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where I realized there was a pattern occurring and that there was, you know, a systemic injustice, and I wanted to expose it through, like, an anthology series, through multiple examples.
Well, yeah, that was, obviously the synopsis is on Netflix, so it's not spoiling anything to say that the episode Kelly is referring to, a man is driving his children down this road. He comes to the end of the road and the car flies into the river. And then he wearily confesses to doing it, but he later contends that it was just an accident. And these were really bizarre cases. Another one was episode five, where people were blaming something on these gang members that, you know, the people in the neighborhood had never even heard of this gang.
Right.
And this, not that your filmmaking or your style or what you were saying became comical, but it was kind of, you know, like you're saying, the law background, there's always this, to me, there's this great debate. I don't like you saying the word argument in our country of there's a crime and people just want to say, you know, send them to jail, send them away, send them. And, you know, they forget that we have due process and they forget that we have a right to an attorney and they forget that we have, you know, and I'm leaving out crimes of, you know, I'm not going to get into, you know, child molestation and just flat out murder, mm-hmm. But I've, in all these situations, what you did really well was, I'm one of those people where I've always just liked to say, if I was being charged with something, I would want the right to an attorney. And
right.
I would want the right to not have the cops fool me into confessing or, and so I think with your, some of these things and kind of wishing you had a law background, a filmmaking background and a law background is so different. How did you remotely adapt the two? I mean, other than like that filmmakers can get argumentative with each other, how did you kind of merge what your skills were with being so far off base from what a lawyer's skill is?
Well, honestly, though, I think lawyers are really good storytellers, right? And when we watch films about good lawyers, you know, it's always about how they tell the story of what happened in trial. So I think I mean, for me, like, I had to familiarize myself with some things about the judicial process, you know, and just things I wasn't aware of. So I felt like it was like a little bit 101, and that's still where I stand. But I did read, you know, tons of transcripts and appellate briefs and documents, and then just talking with dozens of lawyers, I began to get familiar with what their process was. So I just tried to synthesize those ideas, and, you know, to sort of take them, you know, digest everything and then try to understand, okay, what is going here? What am I, you know, what wasn't included in the trial, and how can we present the, you know, holistic picture of the case? And, you know, because some of these lawyers, their hands were tied. They weren't allowed to bring in a false confession expert, and they weren't allowed to, you know, present alternative theories. You know, certain parts of the tape were played over others. You know, the whole tape wasn't played. So there's just a lot of there's a lot of things I felt that I needed to do that didn't happen at trial. So I think it was kind of working just tangentially based on their cases.
Okay, I see. Well, that's a really great way of putting it, that lawyers are storytellers. Again, all opinions of the show are my opinions, and the opinions of Kelly are Kelly's opinions. So nothing that I say is the opinion of the series itself or the filmmakers. I've probably met three lawyers that aren't full of shit. And I've been hit by drunk drivers, and, you know, I've been in car wrecks that where I never caused one, and there's always just some little thing that, you know, doesn't work for you, but when it's time to work for them, it seems to be solved. And so, you know, I kind of really enjoyed this because, of course, who doesn't love a good, a good crime drama and a good, mm-hmm. you know, at the end, Matthew McConaughey's going to make the speech in A Time to Kill, and, you know, it's mm-hmm. going to go right. Mm-hmm. But knowing where it's kind of like it might not go right, and having this where. And of course, we won't get into how, of course, some of our amendments and rights mm-hmm. are under attack right now. No matter who you voted for, we're past that in our country. But we do have different things that protect us legally that are just kind of going into gray areas again because of lawyers. So. The other thing was you had mentioned reading briefs and all that. How long did you research this, and was there any, I mean, you don't have to get into the specifics of the episode, but was there any where it was like episode one took you 6 months, but episode four took you, you know, 2 months, or just an extreme difference in research?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. And I think some of them take longer than others. And I had already made contact with 3 of the 6 cases before Netflix even signed on. I was trying to reach out to people, you know, far in advance, and it's hard. I would go through their lawyers, and their lawyers are busy, or they need to get their client's permission, you know, and they have to write them a letter. And, you know, I would fly out to Detroit and meet people. And, you know, a lot of it was just doing in-person meetings. And it wasn't cold calls, you know. It was really just, like, building trust. And that takes time. And then the other thing that took time was, like, we did a lot of FOIA requests, or Freedom of Information Act, and for public documents. And sometimes that was easy, and they would send it right over. But most of the time they gave us the runaround, and that would just take a long time, just chasing them down. And, you know, for the Burns and Rafay case, they literally told us it was going to take, like, a year. And they were just, like, sending, like, I mean, that case was so big. The trial was 6 months long, and they would just send a few documents over every other week, you know. And just most of that stuff we didn't need. So it was, like, the crucial stuff we were asking for was who to ask, who can get it to us. I mean, I was seriously worried at one point. I was like, are we going to get their hotel room interrogation? Like, I could not find it, and nobody was going to give it to me. It's just, like, finally I figured out who I needed to ask, and it was kind of easy from there. But, like, in cases that are that big, like, who has what? And how do you get it, you know?
Right, especially if you're just a filmmaker and your dad's not a judge or a clerk or somebody who's going to let you copy something. And I guess we've all seen too many movies that are filmmakers where the person goes in and I guess it's not all Charlie Sheen in Wall Street copying files for Michael Douglas. I'm definitely someone who's seen way too many movies, and I have people that tell me that. They're just like, you know, the good guy's not going to show up. But what really interested me was that, you know, if whatever you're allowed to mention, how did you get Netflix involved in this, or how did they get involved, or was it during the... did you have them before it was finished? Did you have to finish it and then show them? How did that evolve?
It was a year of research. So, and I had already touched base with 3 of 6 cases. So I kind of had my head wrapped around the cases, and I knew what the plot was and who the characters were going to be. So I really had a very clear vision in my head of how this would work. And I saw it always as a body of work and something that needed to be told as an anthology, as one big piece, you know, one big film that each episode would speak to the next, and they would all be kind of reiterating similar themes. So I had a very clear idea, and that actually took a while to get, you know, anytime you're developing a project, even if it's a script you're writing, it takes you a while to figure out who your characters are and what they're going to do and how they're interacting. I mean, it took a while to get it all in my head. Once I had it all in my head, and part of the process was making a PDF that was like 35 pages with pictures and like quotes and things like that, and I went and met with Netflix and pitched it to them, like in a room around a big table, and I thought it went horribly, but then later I heard that they were really interested, and that just, it kind of just happened pretty quickly from there. That makes sense.
Okay. So basically, Netflix was involved with also the production of it, because now there's I know how things just go to Netflix, and then I know how they
exactly.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. I just didn't want to say it until you said it. Because I know, like, the first thing that's come into our radar was House of Cards being an original and them doing everything for that.
So this is, like, made for them, you know, with them.
Okay. Has a filmmaker, what is it, just on a personal level, just real briefly, completely off the note, what does it feel like to be, like, a part of a network that makes House of Cards?
I haven't seen that show yet.
Really?
You know, spend all my time watching Twin Peaks. But now I'm on to the show Mindhunter. But I mean, I love Netflix, and I think their programming is really great. I do watch HBO and Showtime. And Amazon, you know, the other ones too. So I think they're all, I really love the model, the streaming model. And the thing that was exciting for me about Netflix, it was when they told me that they were translating it into like 120 languages. And that's where I really got excited, because I thought that it was a more global, you know, it was a global reach. And I was really interested in sharing this story about our criminal justice system with a global audience. And I've been really happy with the response that I've seen, like, on social media from, you know, people all over the world, and just things that they're learning about this country. That was really cool to do, you know, to have that kind of reach, and just, you know, also to not be bogged down by, like, commercial breaks and stuff. It's pretty liberating. So I really enjoyed working in this way with Netflix.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I like how you're saying the, like, Prime, sure, you know, that sure sucks you into having HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, Sundance, Tribeca, and just having all those channels. Fortunately, for the show, we have to keep a couple of these, because we're just fortunate that we have so many. We're humbled by the fact that we have just a large amount of guests such as yourself that have series on HBO or Netflix, or so I get to kind of play the I have to have Netflix, like, boo-hoo, you know, like, poor me, I have to have Amazon. It's, like, totally great that I get to have, like, four or five streaming services, and it's to benefit the show, and then I can kind of be like, okay, well, the show's done for the day, so now it can just benefit me. So it's a really great thing. And did you have any, obviously kind of coming from a documentary background, excuse me, did you have any, films that weren't documentaries that kind of inspired your structure on this, or kind of inspired you to go down this path? Like, even though they weren't true and they were made up, but they kind of gave you a, like, you enjoyed watching them, so it kind of made you say, like, I want to do a documentary that's similar to this film that inspires me.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. Rashomon, when I saw Rashomon, I was like, oh, whoa, this is like a profound idea, you know? And I think I was more interested in the art of it, because at first I had conceived it as an art project, and I kind of visualized it like having all of these at a gallery, and like I wanted to set up interrogation rooms and all of that. So I was kind of conceptualizing it, you know, from an artistic, conceptual art perspective. I think Thin Blue Line is a movie I watched really early, and it had a severe impact on me. Capturing the Freedmen did too. Those are documentaries, and I was just like, wow, this is next level, you know? And then Rashomon was just another great reference. but whenever I was watching Forensic Files, I was like watching a lot of Forensic Files at one point, and I was like, whoa, the lives that they're profiling are really, it was just like wild characters and storylines. And then one of them was a false confession. And I was like, what? People do that? I mean, in Forensic Files, they usually like don't admit to that either. Like it's pretty seamless, like justice, you know, but they've gotten the wrong guy
right.
to be confessed. And then science proved it, whatever. And I was just like, oh, that's, and then I started researching. So I think there was just a lot of things pushing me in the direction. But once I opened the can of worms, like once I really started researching, there was no turning back. I was like, I got to make this. Doesn't matter. It's just, it needs to be done. So.
And that show goes way back, Forensic Files. I mean, I see here on IMDb, they're up to season 15, but that goes back, for, gosh, 404 episodes or 406 episodes.
Some of those people
those
have
are...
been exonerated, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's the other thing too, that, as I said, like a whole other podcast could go on, who's been exonerated, who, after they were put to death, then proof was found.
No, what I'm saying is Forensic Files, like whole thing is like, they proved it, you know, with beyond a reasonable doubt, like this is all like solid, you know. Forensic Files never cast any doubt. It's always like, we got our guy, but like, it's highly exploitative. And some of those cases that they took, like, you know, found later, Forensic Files was actually wrong, and the people have been exonerated. I just think it's an interesting twist.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I can, it's, yeah, it's really getting, the justice system is, yeah, it'd be an interesting ball of wax, and that must have been a really intriguing experience for you to do all that research. I many times in my life I've been told that I should go to law school, but A, it's too much reading, and B, I just wouldn't be able to live with myself if I like got someone's house taken away or got them put in jail and then found out they were innocent or got someone off that was guilty. So, but we have, we have two last questions that we ask every guest, and there's no right or wrong answer, but we love to know from a filmmaker standpoint, if you have the budget you want and the script, story, everything's in order, you have everything you need, what would be your dream genre or project to do?
I have so many interests. My dream project. I think next step, I have another, idea that I'm still forming, and it's still very early, so I can't talk about that, but like, I'd love to direct an episode of Black Mirror, or, I know True Detective is very different from Black Mirror, but like, I like shows like that. So like a True Detective or a Night of or Black Mirror, I think it'd be great to direct a few episodes for TV, something scripted.
Okay. And then the last question is the reverse. Your lights are out and you haven't eaten in a week, and they're repossessing your car, and there's the script's fine, the actors are fine, but there's no way you're gonna put your name on it or direct it.
These are good questions. I would say any commercial. Period. Commercial.
Interesting. It's very interesting.
I don't want to.
Any commercial.
I mean, I guess if I'm starving, I would do it. But I don't want to direct commercials. So,
You know, I would say I might not be interested in directing commercials, except I would direct those J.K. Simmons insurance commercials because I love J.K. Simmons. And I would want to talk to him about Whiplash and Juno, and that would probably be the only reason I would do it. But that's interesting. You're the first answer of that. Everybody, I'm not being crude, but we've been doing it for about 12 to 15 guests, and almost every guest has said that they want to do a sci-fi or a Western, and then 9 out of 10 guests have said that they wouldn't do a porn. So,
interesting.
So I liked hearing commercial because I was, I mean, it goes without saying adult films, because those kill your career in this business, for those of you that don't know. But I really like hearing that commercial, because that's with the way that that gives people a chance to cut their teeth and to kind of learn storytelling and kind of do it in a smaller way, in a quicker way. So I really like that answer.
Well, I mean, it's good for some people. I just don't want to do it, you know. Just not going to be my thing, you know.
Yeah.
I've also seen people get sucked dry by it, and they get, like, teased by all the money, you know. I don't want to.
Oh, right.
I don't ever want to. I don't want that to be, you know, something that distracts me. If I have to be, you know, if I have to struggle, that's okay.
Right. You just want to be the murder solver.
you just want to be the
one who tackles, who drives people into their river, drives their family into the river. No, I love it. I think it's awesome. The series was great. Again, everyone, watch this on Netflix. It flies by. I know we've covered series before where I've had people be like, why did you have that on? I don't have 8 hours. You know, I have this or that, but excuse me, not only will this go by quick, but this would be a good one too, if you wanted to just say, hey, Monday, Tuesday through Sunday night, we're going to watch one. And, so that's the last thing I wanted to say, to compliment you, Kelly, is that it's kind of funny when people will say they don't have time for 7 45-minute shows, but like 6 nights in a row, they'll watch 4 hours of TV. And it's like, you know, you could have finished that series that you said was too long. So,
that's right.
I always find it interesting. And then now the way binge watching is a thing and is a word in our culture. And so anyway, so we thank you for joining us. We thank April. We thank Falco. And we wish you the best with this series. Again, everyone check it out. It was great. I actually watched 5 of them just in one sitting. I just didn't even, the way Netflix just starts them, I just hadn't noticed that they were just starting, and then I was like, wait, this guy wasn't in the other, and then I was like, oh, it started, got 2 minutes,
thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome, and the very quick last question is this something that's ever going to be available on DVD, or is it just going to be strictly Netflix?
That's such a good question. And I should talk to them about that, because it'd be really great to have it on DVD. I don't know yet. But the answer is I don't know, but I'd love that.
Okay. Well, again, yeah, thank you. And it was great to have you. And please, April and that company, we do a lot of different things with them. So they know how to get a hold of us. So all guests are welcome back, unless they hang up the phone and say, my gosh, why did I just do that show? So please know when you have another project or you want to come back for something, let April and them know, and they can reach out to me. We love having return guests. We think all filmmakers are just filmmakers, and not this big rat race. So we appreciate your time tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time. And watch the confession tape.
Yes, check it out, everyone. You have a great night,
okay.
Kelly, and aloha.
Okay, aloha. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that's going to do it for Talking Pictures tonight. I'm in South Carolina. I'm going to go fishing with my dad right now. So I'm going to hit the road, take care, and spread some aloha. But most of all, spread some peace. Take care.